Player can either be overrated or underrated, or somewhere in between. Being overrated in sports is when people say you're really good, when people say that you're going to be a great franchise quarterback or a great, you know, hitter that can take the middle of the lineup for many years, and then you end up being, well, stinking, basically. People say that you're good, people throw all this hype at you, but you don't really live up to the expectations. Then there's those players who are underrated. The players that nobody talks about, but the players who are solid, that every year come back and get better and better and better, and eventually those are the players that get recognized as the good players, the people who are underrated for a long time and work hard to be good. It's better to be underrated than overrated, because when you're overrated, you stink and everybody knows it, and that's kind of the worst, when you're not really faithful to do what you're supposed to do. There's a certain level of hype that everybody has surrounding their life. There's a certain level of hype and expectation that people set in your lives for what you should do. And also, there's a certain level of hype that you set for yourself. A certain level of hype that you say you're going to do this and say that you're going to go be that and say you're going to go to this place or that place. You're going to say this thing, you're going to do this thing. A hype that you say, I'm going to be like that, but then sometimes we don't live up. Sometimes we're overrated and that's our own fault. Today in James 5, James is going to say, don't overhype yourself. Don't hype yourself up so much. Don't overpromise and underdeliver. Never do that. James chapter 5, verse 12. If you have a Bible, let's turn there. James 5, 12. We're going to look at just one verse this morning. This is the first time in the book of James we've only looked at one verse. So you know it's going to be a good verse. One verse. We did six verses last time, one verse this morning. Remember last time, James said Jesus is going to come back, and that's going to create something in us. We should be changed knowing that Jesus is at the door, the judge is at the door, he's about to come in, and he's about to judge. That should change the way we live. We said when we're suffering, we should be patient, we should be strong. And when things are going good, we should rejoice, and we should be careful that we don't do what God says not to do. And then he says this, okay? For saying not complaining, that was another thing he said. He gives another sin of the tongue that he says, be careful. Jesus is going to come back, so be careful you don't do this thing. Look at verse 12. It says, above all, my brothers, do not swear. Okay? When someone says that, do not swear, or swearing, what do you think of? Do you think of bad words? Do you think of words that get like beeped out on a screen, or, you know, in songs, make songs that have a little E next to them, explicit, right? Is that what you think of swearing? Well, that swearing is definitely condemned in the Bible, but that's not the type of swearing that we're talking about here. Keep reading. It says, don't swear either by heaven or by earth or by any other oath, right? Swearing, oaths, okay? Now we're understanding what this means. We're talking about a promise that's a solemn promise, a sacred promise, usually invoking some things, either by heaven, right? And when the Bible says, you know, swearing by heaven, all that means is people swearing by God. You've heard people say that, haven't you? That people are swearing something to God. He says, don't do that. Be careful about that. He says, don't even swear by anything else, anything on the earth. Don't even swear by your chair or your arm. Like, don't even, you know, I don't know why you'd do that, but don't even swear by anything that you think is important on this earth. Don't do that. Why? Because your yes should be yes. Look at it. It says, but let your yes be yes and your no be no, so that you may not fall under condemnation. Condemnation, that's the word that kind of means judgment. We've been talking about how the judge is standing at the door and he's about to pounce in. He says, don't swear, don't make promises, don't overhype yourself, don't overpromise and underdeliver. We have that temptation when we want to make ourselves look better, when we want to act like we're better than we really are, to overpromise. James says, don't do that. One of the reasons why all this is important is because God values truthfulness. God cares that you tell the truth. And I know we don't talk about that every week. That might seem like a basic thing, but telling the truth really is that important. Before we even talk about swearing and oaths, I just want to look at what God says about telling the truth. So you can write this down for point number one. We're going to unpack it. It's this. Value truthfulness like God does. Value truthfulness like God does. I think the problem is you probably don't think lying is such a big deal. And you might say, well, yeah, it's a big deal. I remember when I was a kid, I got a lot of spankings for lying. I got a lot of punishment, a lot of timeouts or whatever, lying. Yeah, lying's a big deal. But there's things that are like really bad other than that. And sometimes thinking about other things, maybe that's worse than lying. We sometimes make lying seem like it's a small thing, okay? lying is so important that it made it in God's top 10. The top 10 things he said, hey, 10 commandments. Don't do this, do this, don't do this, don't do this. Okay? Commandment number 9, Exodus 20, verse 16, says, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. Right? That's even a specific type of lying, right? False witness. Imagine you're in a courtroom and, you know, Colin stole some Skittles, all right? Okay? I mean, it's just, it's there. Right? And Victoria saw it, okay? She saw this happen. But if Victoria wanted to get Colin off the hook, she said, no, he didn't steal those Skittles. He didn't do it. Or if Natalie didn't see it, right? I'm just now picking people. If Natalie didn't see it, but she just doesn't like Colin for some reason. And she just goes, yeah, I saw it, when she didn't really see it. Okay? That's two people bearing false witness, not telling the truth about something they saw, not telling the truth specifically about someone else. It says, never do that. Never tell a lie about other people. Be so careful about that. And you might think, okay, well, if that's the only lying God doesn't care about, well, then I'm okay. Another verse for you. Proverbs chapter 6, verse 16. I said that the 10 commandments are 10 really important rules. Those were the first 10 things God ever wrote down. If you think about that, that was the first written word of God we have. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, those were written just after the 10 commandments were given, about events that happened before, but the first written words of God are the 10 commandments, okay? In Proverbs 6, God says, there's some things that I hate that I want you to know about. Just some things that I hate. Six things that the Lord hates, it says. And seven that are an abomination to him. Seven things that he just absolutely hates. So he's going to list only a few things right here. What do you think the first one is? Well, makes sense when we think about it in perspective. First one is talking about pride, haughty eyes, okay? Eyes that look down on people, right? Not physically, because I'm looking down now because you're lower, but no, I'm talking about eyes that say, oh, I'm better than you. Look in, you can even picture that glance, right? You can send a gif that's like that. You know, gifs or gifs? Gifs, come on, no, they're gifs, right? And it captures like that little emotion. You can kind of see that. You can see a gif of a guy just a, looking down on somebody, right? That's the idea. God hates haughty eyes. When we look at other people and look down on them and think in our minds, I'm better than you. Or I don't think you should do that because I know what's best. I'm better than you. God says, I hate that. That's number one thing. What's next? You guessed it. A lying tongue. I hate a lying tongue. Now, I know this is really important to ask and I haven't asked it yet, but are you a person who lies? Do you lie? And maybe you'll say, well, it's not like bold-faced lies. Not like, oh, you know, totally out there. It's kind of like I just twist the truth a little bit. I, you know, my parents say, what were you doing? And I only tell them like that last thing that I was doing in the last 5 minutes of what I was doing. But I don't really tell them the whole truth. Or when I tell a story about something that happened, I don't tell what really happened. I just exaggerate it and blow it out of proportions and be super dramatic about it. Right? That's not a lie because it's kind of based in truth. Well, no, God hates a lying tongue. God hates it when we take the truth and make it anything less than the truth. Here's what else he says. You're thinking, okay, pride, lying. I bet this is all going to be like little, you know, commands for little kids. No, next one is thing that God hates, hands that shed innocent blood, okay? Murdering. Okay, I guess that makes sense why God would hate that, right? But before murdering, he hates pride, and he hates lying, and then he hates murdering, right? You, in your mind, probably do not put those things on equal playing field, do you? You don't think, oh, you know, I could lie or I could murder. Which one would be worse? Well, I guess lying's worse, so I'll lie instead of murder. No, you're like, whoa, murder's way worse. Like, I would never want to do that. I would lie to someone before I'd kill them. God says, no, I hate lying that much. That's how much I hate it. As much as murder. I hate it. Wow, that's intense. What's next? The next thing that God hates is a heart that devises wicked plans. Right? Someone who kind of just sits by themselves. The book of Proverbs even portrays it like someone who creates evil in their heart while they're just laying in their bed. They're just sitting around thinking, what evil thing can I do today? Right? You think, whoa, that's really bad. Like, I don't do that. When I do evil, I just kind of, I mess up, I make a mistake. In general, I want to do the right thing. You might think that. He's like, God hates it when people sit around and plot evil things. You hate that too. I hate that too. It makes sense. Goes on. Feet that make haste to run to evil. God hates it when people are quick to do the wrong thing, right? You know those people, and maybe you are one of those people, that if someone wants to get into some trouble, someone wants to do something bad, you're like, I'm in. I'm quick to do that. Let's go. The first time you're tempted, you're like, yeah, let's do this. I want that sin. A person who loves sin, right? You think, okay, I guess that makes sense why God hates that. The next thing is a false witness who breathes out lies. In the six things that God hates, guess what shows up twice? Lying. God hates lying. You need to see that that's such a big deal. And I know some of you don't have this in the correct perspective. Some of you think that other things are a bigger deal than lying, but it'd be hard pressed to find something that is. God says he hates six things and two of them are lying. It gets worse. Psalm 5:6 says, this is talking about God. It says, you destroy those who speak lies. If you're a constant liar, it says God destroys those people. Then it gets even more personal. The Lord abhors. That means he hates in his own heart. God hates two things. The bloodthirsty, right? That makes sense. Person who wants to go out and murder, someone who's really excited about doing that. God hates that because they're taking advantage of people, and a deceitful person. Bloodthirsty and deceitful. The Lord abhors that. He absolutely hates it when we lie. You might think, well, that doesn't apply to me. Revelation 21:8. Here's what it says. After describing heaven and describing all the awesome things that we're going to experience with Jesus Christ in eternity, here's what he says. It says, but as for the cowardly, the faithless, the detestable, as for murderers, the sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, you're thinking, okay, yeah, all these bad people that are going to be outside. What else? And all liars. Their portion will be in the lake that burns with fire and sulfur, which is the second death. You know, if I told you, yeah, my constant pattern of my life, I'm a Christian, but I'm just a murderer. Like, I just have fun killing people. It just happens. Sorry about that. But I'm a Christian, though. Like, I believe in Jesus, but I like to kill people. You'd probably be like, you're crazy. You're not a Christian. You're crazy. I'm going to lock you up, right? What about the person who says they're a Christian, but oh yeah, I lied, and it's not a big deal. It's just exaggeration. It's just white lies. It's a little bending of the truth. It's just not telling the truth to my parents. No, all liars have their portion in the lake of fire. Do you see how serious this is? I know we don't talk about it that much, and maybe that's my fault, but I want you to see how seriously God takes telling the truth, the whole truth. Think about what God commands for Christians. Ephesians 4:25 says this, therefore, having put away all falsehood. I like that picture, right? It's like you have stuff, and Paul's like, no, if you're a Christian, put that old stuff away. All falsehood. Let each of you speak truth with his neighbor, for we're members of one body, okay? In Ephesians 4:5, this theme comes up. It's about how the church, Christians, are like a body. Like we are one body together. We're many members, but we come together in one body. And he says this, you guys are like one body? Why would you lie to each other, right? Why would you take like your hand and smack your foot, right? Why would you, it doesn't make sense for your body to work against each other. It makes sense for the body to work with each other, right? You know what happens when people's nerve endings lie to their brain? They're paralyzed, right? That doesn't work. When the nerve endings don't go and they don't talk to, you know, let's say the hand, the nerve endings didn't go talk to my brain and I couldn't feel it, guess what? I'm paralyzed, okay? Paul's saying, look, if you're a Christian, it makes no sense for you to lie to other Christians. It just doesn't even make any sense. It's foolish. It's backwards. It's upside down. However you want to say it, it just doesn't make sense. He says a similar thing in Colossians 3:8. Same person talking here. This is Paul writing to a different group of Christians, but he says this, but now you must put them all away. Interesting. Same idea, right? Putting this falsehood away, putting away our sin. Says, here's the list of sins that you got to put away. First of all, anger, wrath, malice, slander, obscene talk from your mouth. You see how those last ones are about your words, right? Put those away. And verse 9 says, do not lie to one another. Don't lie to one another, seeing that you've put off the old self with its practices. See, it makes sense. If you're a person who lies to your parents constantly, that makes sense if you're not a Christian. Not that it's right, not that it's good. You should be punished for it. And I'm sure your parents have done a good job at that, I'm sure. But if you're a Christian, lying is not your practice. It is just absolutely not. And now we can kind of look backwards and say, okay, do I lie? Is lying like a regular pattern of my life? If that's true, how can you say you're in Christ? I don't get it. The passage here says, right, don't lie to one another, seeing that you've put off the old self and you have the new self being put on. Right? If you don't put off the old self, you're going to lie. Okay, flip that on its head. If you lie, guess what? You have not put off the old self. You just haven't. God values truthfulness so much, and I want you to do the same thing. I want you to see how big of a deal it is. One of the reasons I think that God cares about truthfulness is because he always tells the truth. He always tells the truth. And when he makes promises, he expects people to know that he's telling the truth. He requires it. Think about this. Here's some fancy Bible words that you've heard before. Covenant. Right? You know what that means? It means a promise. Right? What about the word testament? You got two of them, right? Old and new. You know what that means? Promise or oath. They mean the same thing. What are we talking about? God makes promises. I think that's why one of the reasons God cares so much about us telling the truth, because he makes promises and he keeps them. He never lies. James 5:12 says, but above all, my brothers, do not swear. Okay, here's the question that you should be having at this point. Is he saying that we should never make any promises ever? It's a valid question. He says, don't swear. Don't make any oaths. Does that mean that it's wrong for me to make any oaths? Well, not exactly. The people who he was writing to did oaths in kind of a weird way. They made oaths with the intention of breaking them. And what he's saying is don't have any of these careless promises. Stop making those. But what you should do when there's promises that you need to make, like let's say when you're in court, right, and you have to swear in, or when you take, you know, let's say you become, I don't know, important one day and you become like the president or something, and then you got to put your hand on the Bible and you do the sworn oath, right? Is this verse saying, no, you can't be president then, because if you're president, then you have to swear, and you can't swear because, no, it's not necessarily what it's saying. If that were true, none of you should get married, because when you get married, what you're doing is you're swearing an oath, okay? You're swearing an oath. So it's not saying forbidding all types of oaths in all places at all times. What it's saying is don't make careless promises, okay? I don't want to make sure that we're not making careless promises. That's point number two. Stop making careless promises. Don't swear by heaven, because that's where God is, right? Don't swear by earth, because God made that. If the words come out of your mouth that you're swearing to God, if that comes out of your mouth, let me just tell you something. You need to never say that again. You never need to use those words again, ever. Because usually when people are saying that, aren't they making careless promises? Right? If that's a phrase you use regularly, isn't it usually like a careless promise? You're just, oh yeah, I saw this, when you don't really know. You're gonna bring God into the equation, you better make sure you keep that promise. You better make sure that you're right. Because if not, you know what you're doing? You're taking God's name in vain. And some of you might think, well, I do that too, right? Well, that's serious too. I know it's mixing multiple things here, but when people swear by God's name and don't keep it, they're using his name in vain. When you use God's name as a curse word, you're using his name in vain. It's interesting. We read in the DBR in the book of Samuel. Remember Eli's sons right at the beginning? They were really bad guys. The Bible says they did two things that were really bad. Both of them were really bad, but one of them made God extremely angry. One of the things was they were doing weird stuff, bad stuff, with the ladies who worked at the temple, right? Doing really bad stuff. And it said that made God angry. But you know what it said made God even more angry? When he took a fork and they were sticking it into the meat and taking the meat of the sacrifice and eating it for themselves. And we look at that and say, well, eating meat, doing bad things with people, like, okay, one of those is worse than the other. No, God says that one was worse. How is that possible? How is that possible? Because you bring God's name into this. You bring God's character into this. God cares so much about his name. Exodus says that God is a jealous God. His name is jealous. There's a time in the book of Numbers where people were breaking faith with God. And you know what God says to the Levites and they actually step up. They stand up and they go kill a bunch of Israelites. And you're like, okay, what in the world? Why is that a good thing? And God says, because they were zealous for my name. They're zealous for my name. My name is so important. And if you're using God's name to make promises, I just want to tell you, you're making a grave, grave mistake. Book of Exodus says, God will not hold him guiltless. You will not be guiltless if you use God's name in vain. He keeps track of every single time. Talk about the judge standing at the door. You're invoking the judge's name. That's a huge mistake. Jesus talks about swearing and making oaths as well. I want to turn to the passage where he talks about that. In Matthew chapter 5, let's all turn there. This is a good passage. It's the only big passage we're going to turn to today. But Matthew chapter 5, I want you to see it. It's really important because it's going to explain kind of what James's thought process is. He gives a little bit more information. James kind of gives it to us in one verse. Jesus gives it to us in a number of verses. In verse 33, Matthew 5, 33. In the Sermon on the Mount, which is where Jesus is right here, he's saying stuff and he's saying, hey, I know you've heard that this is the law, and it is the law, but I'm going to tell you what the law really meant. Okay, the people, the Pharisees and the religious teachers were kind of taking God's rules and dumbing them down, kind of taking the edge off of them, kind of the idea of just kind of painting them in a corner, saying, oh, they don't really mean that. They just kind of mean this. Where Jesus says, you miss the point of these laws. And what he's going to say about oaths is really important. Check it out. Verse 33. Jesus says, again, you've heard it was said of old, to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you've sworn. That's a great command, right? God made that command. He's not going to change that command. But here's what he says. But I say to you, don't take an oath at all. Because usually, guess what? You don't need to take an oath. I want you to think about this. In the days before written contracts, the days before, you know, iPhones, where you could take pictures and record that people said certain things, it was kind of your word against mine, wasn't it? And if I wanted to lie to you and say, oh, that didn't happen, guess what? It was your word against mine. That's why in the Bible, it's so clear that when someone's being accused of a crime, it needs to be on the evidence of two or three witnesses. It can't just be one person making up a bunch of lies, right? And swearing and oaths was a way for you to invoke a third party, right? Let's say we have a disagreement, right? Or something happens and I want to say, well, God's watching and God knows the truth. Let's agree to tell the truth before God because God will judge one of us if we don't tell the truth. That was kind of the purpose of swearing. Check out what he says in verse 34. He says, don't make an oath. Don't swear at all, either by heaven, for that's God's throne, or by earth, for it's his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it's the city of the great king. And don't take an oath by your head, for you can't make one hair black or white. What is he saying here? It might be confusing because we didn't live in this context, but I want you to see that there are people who are making oaths with their fingers crossed behind their back. That was the idea, okay? They were making promises with kind of opt-out clauses where they'd be like, okay, I promise by Jerusalem. Ooh, okay, because if I don't keep it, then, you know, it's not a big deal because it's not by God, it's just by Jerusalem. And then that's okay because Jerusalem, I didn't say by Jerusalem and the king. And, you know, if the king is endowed by God, then okay, then okay, I'm off the hook if I don't do this. They made all these like navigated, that sounded confusing when I said it, didn't it? Right? Because it's all these like little intricate rules for what mattered and what didn't. And Jesus actually explains that in Matthew chapter 23. I'll read it. Matthew 23, 16. He says, woe to you blind guides. He's talking to the Pharisees. He says, you guys say, if anyone swears by the temple, it's nothing. But if anyone swears by the gold that's in the temple, he's bound by his oath. Right? You'd be like, what is going on here? Like, we don't do this. I know, but it's important for us to understand what they did. People were swearing by the temple and saying, okay, that's kind of my fingers behind my back. I don't really have to keep this promise. You know, when I break it, I'm like, oh, I just sweared by the temple. I didn't swear by the gold that was in the temple. And Jesus is like, you guys are so dumb. Like, you guys don't get it. You're missing the point of these vows. He says, you blind fools, right? This is, Matthew 23 is when Jesus gets spicy. So if you want to see him go after people, Matthew 23. He says, for which is greater, the gold in the temple or the temple that made the gold sacred? Duh, it's the temple. And then he said, and some of you say, if anyone swears by the altar, right, where they had the sacrifice, it's nothing. But if anyone swears by the gift that's on the altar, then he's bound by his oath. Jesus is like, you guys are blind. Which is greater, the gift on the altar or the altar that makes the gift sacred? Right? Of course, it's the altar. It's God that makes these sacred. So whoever swears by the altar swears by it and everything on it. And whoever swears by the temple swears by it and by him who dwells in it. 1 Kings 8, who dwells in the temple? God. God says, my special presence will be there. You want to swear by the temple, just realize you're swearing by God, really. You swear by your hand, guess what? You're swearing by something that God made. Every promise that you make is before God. And God expects you to keep every promise you make. That's essentially Jesus' point. It says, whoever swears by heaven swears by the throne of God and him who sits on it. Back in Matthew 5, verse 37, Jesus says the same thing James says. Let what you say simply be yes or no. Stop making these promises that you can't keep. Stop overhyping yourself. Anything more than this comes from evil. Now, I want to address something that you might be thinking. Some of you might grow up in families where maybe promises aren't kept, where your parents don't keep the promises they make. They say they're going to take you somewhere. They say they're going to do something, and they don't keep it. And some of you have learned the only way to get your parents to do what they say is by making them promise you. Okay? That might be a good manipulation tactic, but just know that that's not the ideal from God, that you force people to promise you. That's like not the ideal. Even swearing oaths. It would be better if you didn't have to swear an oath with each other. If you just said, hey, I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to, you know, pay this many sheep and you're going to get this many cattle, right? We're good? All right, handshake. Great, we're good. Right? It'd be better if you didn't have to swear any oaths at all. But I know some of you maybe are in families or maybe are in friendship situations where your trust is constantly broken. I understand that and I get that and I'm sorry about that. But that doesn't mean that you have any right to do the same. Doesn't mean you have any right to do the same. These people were making promises with the intention of breaking them. I want you to think about that. Do I make any promises? Do I say that I'm going to do anything with the intention of not doing it? Think about that. I say, oh, I'll be there, while the whole time I'm like, I'm not going to be there. Or you say, oh, I'll help you with that, with the whole time I'm like, I'm not going to help them with that. Think about that. Do you make any claims? Do you commit to anything knowing that you're not going to do it? Jesus says, it's evil. Why? Because God's standard of truthfulness is so high, right? If God didn't care about us telling the truth, then maybe it wouldn't matter. But guess what? Every promise you make is like you're swearing it before God, because guess what? You are. So you never really have to say that you're swearing it before God. I'd advise that you never say that. Careless promises about your future, about doing stuff at a certain time. What about when you do commit to things, though, right? Here's what I'm not saying. Don't commit to anything. Don't make any promises. Why? If that were the truth, then your life would, you can never get a job, you can never get married, you can never have any real relationships if you never made any commitments. You're like scared of it, right? The Bible's saying, look, you should be scared of commitment at some level, but don't let that stop you from committing. And when you do commit, just realize that you're bound before God to do what you've said you're going to do. You're bound before God to keep your word. Let your yes be yes and your no be no, so that you may not fall under condemnation. I don't want any of you to be judged for the careless words that you said, the careless promises that you made. Bible's clear, though. People will be. If you make promises that you don't intend to keep, just know that God was listening and God will hold you accountable for that. It's a dangerous place to be. Here's the thing. If some of you stop making promises today, the people in your life wouldn't believe you if you said yes or no. It says, don't swear, don't make any oaths, but some of you, I would guess, are not trustworthy, so that if you said, hey, the Bible says, hey, no making promises, so I'm not going to promise, right? It's not the right idea. Like, oh, I'm not going to promise anything, so I'm not going to be bound by anything. No, it's when you say you're going to do something, you keep your word. And it's so important because it's before God. Some of you don't have a trustworthy reputation, though, right? If you stop making, I mean, there are people in your life, even some of your parents maybe, don't trust you. So when you tell them you did something, they say, do you promise you did that? Right? If that ever happens, just know that that's not a sign of confidence in them. That's a sign of their distrust in you because you're not trustworthy, okay? Point number three, if we're going to do this rightly, we need to earn a trustworthy reputation. If you're a Christian, you need to earn a trustworthy reputation with your parents, with your friends, with your small group leaders. The very worst thing that you could ever be is not trusted. If when you say something, people are like, yeah, well, but they said it, so I don't really know if it's true. Ah, that girl, yeah, well, she said it. Well, I guess I can't really know if it's true. If he said it, well, I guess I'm not really sure. This was him. Maybe if it was someone trustworthy, I'd trust it, but that person, yeah, I don't really trust what they say. That is a bad place to be. And maybe some of you are there. Actually, I'm sure some of you are there with your parents, with your small group leaders, with your friends. You're not trusted. So how do we earn this back? Well, being reliable is really important. It takes time. Don't expect that to happen overnight. Don't expect, if you've not been a trustworthy person, don't expect everyone to trust you. Because in a sense, you've got to bear the consequences of that. It's what happens when, you know, some of you get in trouble with your parents and they discipline you. Guess what? There's a trust that they had with you. They gave you responsibility. They gave you a phone. They gave you the ability to go out. They gave you something and you misused it. Guess what? Trust is broken. Don't expect that to just be given right back the minute you say you're sorry. You have to bear the consequences of that. You have to bear that discipline. You have to earn back that trust. Reminds me of Johnny the Jeep. Johnny the Jeep. It was not my car. That was Alexandra's car. And that car was not trustworthy. It was not trustworthy. It was unreliable. You know why? Because it was a 1998 Jeep Grand Cherokee. The car was older than the person who was driving it, okay? So it was not very reliable. And it was a Jeep. No offense to Jeeps. Not super reliable. When they get old, that's just, unless you take care of it, whatever. It just wasn't super reliable. The speakers, like one side worked. Like the other side. And it's funny, even now, Alexander's like, don't turn it all the way up because you'll blow out the speakers. I'm like, what? Like, no, my speakers in my car, they're made to, that you'll never blow them out because they're capped out. She's like, oh, the one that I had, like the speakers were aftermarket and we blew out one side because we turned it up to like 50% and it blew it out. So she had to listen to her music at like 20%. So if she ever opened the windows, she could never play music because you could never hear it. Anyway, it was bad, okay, unreliable. Sometimes it wouldn't start. Like even the tires are messed up. I know that's like, you just get new tires, right? The tires ran out faster than you, I don't know. But it just wasn't reliable. You know, when we'd have to go somewhere, maybe have to take a trip, you know what car we were taking? Johnny the boyfriend's car, not Johnny the Jeep. Okay, just on a side note, okay, she didn't name it Johnny the Jeep because I'm unreliable, okay? It was before me, okay? She named it before me. She also felt weird. On our first date, I think she said, yeah, like, I've called my car Johnny, and I think that could be weird. I'm like, yep, because I'll bring it up in 4 years in a sermon illustration. I didn't say that. But it just wasn't reliable. If we had to go somewhere, guess whose car we were taking? The 2007 Honda Civic in Tango Red, baby. You know it, right? Because that's a reliable car. None of this 1998 Jeep Grand Cherokee. Ugh. Even though it looked cool. But like the windows didn't always work. They'd get stuck. It just wasn't a good car. If you ask her, she'd be like, no, I loved it though. Because it was a fun car because it was cool and it got like 8 miles to the gallon. She had to fill up her tank every 3 days, like $80. Anyway, I feel like I'm complaining about her car. She got a new car recently. Not like recent, but still a Jeep. She couldn't get away from the Jeeps. But guess what? It's a 2016 Jeep Compass because of you, Compass, because she loves you. No, it's not why, but it's just, it happens to be a Compass. Guess what? Guess whose car we're taking now? Her car, not mine. Because it's even more reliable than mine. It's a 2016. Mine's a 2007. Mine's old. Mine's as old as you. Is anyone born in 2007?
No.
2006? No. Okay, 2006, fine. Next year, when the seventh graders come up, I can use that joke. My car's as old as you. Being reliable is really important, and you need to be a reliable person. And that's going to take time. That's going to take you earning it. Titus 2:7, instructions from Paul to Titus and the people in his church who were going to lead it. He said, show yourselves in all respects to be a model of good works. Okay, that takes time. Showing yourself in all respects, in every area of your life, to be a model of good works. It says in your teaching, when you teach, when you tell others about God, well, you better show integrity and dignity. It's so important that you earn a good reputation, especially as a Christian. Because I want you to realize that there are people who look up to you. There are people who look up to you. You might think that's not true, but it's true. Anybody in here have younger siblings? Who has younger siblings in here? Okay. Maybe, yeah, 75% of you. Okay. 75% of you have built-in people below you. They're built-in because they're in your family. That's what I mean by that. And they look up to you, whether you think they do or not. Some of you think, ah, my little sister doesn't look up to me. My little brother doesn't look up to me. Oh, just trust me. They do. Because if you break mom and dad's rules and you get away with it, guess what they're going to do? They will break the same rules. You don't keep your word? Guess what they're going to do? They're not going to keep their word. You realize that your actions and your trustworthiness is so important because you can help lead little people, right, to do the right thing, or you can lead them to sin, right? The little people in your life, right? You're laughing at little people, right? They're just smaller than you, okay? I'm not talking about those among us who are challenged in height, right? That's not what I'm talking about when looking up, right? It's okay. Nathan Zelaya's like, whew, good. Well, we're good, we're good. Don't you laugh, Maya and Morgan. Who else is short? I don't know. Looking up to people. I'm talking about the people younger than you. Just to be clear. So important that you set an example. You know, the reason I said little ones, you're going to think that was on accident. Well, Jesus said something about little ones. In Luke 17, he said, if anyone causes one of these little ones to sin, he's talking about people. He's talking about little people. He's talking about kids, right? You cause a kid to sin, you cause a young Christian to sin, guess what's going to happen? He said, it'll be better for you to have a millstone, that's a concrete donut, tied around your neck and thrown into the heart of the sea. It would be better for you to have that happen to you than for you to lead little ones in your life, people who are younger than you, people who look up to you, to lead them into sin. That is how important you keeping your word is. You might think it only affects you. It doesn't just affect you. It affects other people as well. You know, God loves it when we keep our word, and he hates it when we don't. Proverbs chapter 12, verse 22. Proverbs 12:22 says, lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who act faithfully are his delight. He looks at the people in this room who keep their word, and he's like, yes, those are my people. I'm excited that those are my people. What about lying lips? Well, they're an abomination to him. They're just a disgusting thing to him. He hates that. Proverbs 26:28 says, a lying tongue hates its victims. You might not think that you hate the people that you're lying to. But that's what the scripture says. A lying tongue hates its victims. It says, and a flattering mouth works ruin. Right? Flattering. That's something we don't talk about every day. But I think it's really important as we close up talking about a trustworthy reputation that you don't get that trustworthy reputation by lying. You might think, how could I get a trustworthy reputation by lying? Well, flattery is the word that we use in the Bible to talk about a sin where you say nice things to people that aren't true. Where you lie to make yourself look better or other people look better when it's not true. To spread things that might be good that are not true. And you might think, well, what? That's just like being nice. No, it's not just being nice. It's a little worse than that. Flattering. Telling someone, oh, you're so great, when you turn around and say, oh, they're terrible at that. Or you say, oh, this is so great, when you turn around and say, oh, that was so lame. That's called flattery. A flattering mouth works ruins. You can try to get a trustworthy reputation, and you could do it the wrong way. You could do it by being a flatterer, by being a liar who's disguising themselves as the person who's telling the truth. I just want you to be careful about how you earn it. It's like what I said at the beginning about the overrated player and the underrated player. I mean, how do underrated players show that they're good? Not by tweeting a bunch of weird stuff, not by doing weird stuff to get a bunch of attention, but just by just being good at their job, by just doing their job, and eventually they'll get noticed. That trustworthy reputation is so important. He commands us to have it. Because making promises and swearing and taking oaths that we intend to break is an evil thing before God. We need to make sure that we're never making careless promises like that because we see that truth is as important as God says it is. Never forget that. Let's pray.